Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's summer golf wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and state golf representative Sophie Hilditch.
Good on you, Wallace. Thank you, Sophie. Good afternoon. How was your weekend?
Yeah, too bad, Hooky. I can't complain. How about yours?
Mine was okay. I did check a golf score at Royal Adelaide, and it looks like that you were on the way to a 19 and 17 victory across 36 holes, but the rain intervened.
Yeah, look, I don't think it was going to be a 19-17 victory. That's very generous, but I did get off to a very nice hot start. I am three up through three, which is, you know, I'm not upset with, but I'm actually a bit nervous because I think that's just going to get set fire to my opponent. So I'm scared with what she's about to come out with when we reconvene.
Well, rain stopped play yesterday. Well, not so much rain, but rain and thunder and lightning. Mm-hmm. When are you rescheduled to?
We're not back on until the 23rd of November. So I have about 3 weeks to work my stuff out, which honestly, it's a little bit needed. I was a bit rusty on the Saturday in my semi-final, so it was definitely needed.
So two under through three and well and truly on the way. You've just got to stew on that lead for another couple of weeks. Good luck with that. You'll be fine. Hey, let's get us underway. I want to know who Sophie Starr is for the week.
Sophie Starr, well, this was a no-brainer for me, Hooky. It's Phil Chapman. On Saturday, Phil Chapman became club champion at the Ashton Hills Golf Course for the 19th time. Just unbelievable. He's an incredible player, an even better bloke. He was actually the state amateur champion back in 1990 and 1995. And recently, and we would know this, he's been awarded the South Australian Senior Order of Merit for 2025. So he is Sophie Starr.
Well done, Sophie. He's won two club championships at Gooyonga as well.
Yeah.
So 21 club championships in his journey. It's an incredible story. I don't know. Is this Ben's best? I'm going to just share with you a quick story about the Glenelg Cricket Club. And I wanted to share it because I played there and your dad played there along with both of your brothers, I think, earlier on in their local careers. They've got a huge event next week. It is Cricket Goes Green for Glenelg. And they are going to be doing the greenest cricket event you could possibly imagine. Every player is going to be travelling to the game in an electric vehicle. They've got councils providing special bins that allow them to select whether it goes into the recycling or the hard rubbish or the green waste. They've got sustainable afternoon teas being prepared. It is quite incredible, all of the things that they've got going on. They've got solar batteries getting involved in the day as well. Now, look, you don't have to be the greatest greenie supporter. I understand that, but I do want to recognise what Glenelg is doing. If you're going to get involved in a cause and you're going to do it with both feet in, and that's exactly what Glenelg are doing. I think Prospect have won early next year, sort of late in January, but Glenelg's comes up this week, and I just want to wish them all the best. Congratulations on what they're doing. Ben's best this week, the Glenelg Cricket Club.
No, I love that, Hooky. That's a good news story. Glenelg, obviously, as well with the algae bloom and everything. It's kind of nice to see something that they're doing something for the environment at Glenelg Cricket Club.
Good on you, Soph. Well said. Yes, the algae bloom certainly a massive effect on the community down there along the coastline. Hey, bit of news around the week. I thought the most interesting story to me was that Kai Trump, the granddaughter of US President Donald Trump, has been granted a sponsor's exemption into the tournament that gets underway on Thursday night, our time. What did you make of that?
Look, I have a bit of mixed feelings about this one, if I'm honest. Look, some people have been comparing her to some of the other stars that they have playing, like Caitlin Clark, who's a WNBA star, and they're saying that they're trying to get these celebrities on to try and get more media attention and bring the attention to the girls. And look, I 100% agree. I mean, look at us. We're talking about this LPGA event, which probably normally wouldn't be getting this much attention, and that is because Kai Trump is playing. But I think the distinct difference here is Kai Trump is actually an aspiring amateur golfer. She is famous because of who her grandfather is. And look, she's currently ranked 461st in the, I think it's like the American Junior Golf Association rankings. Earlier on in this year, she played in her first major junior tournament and she shot 62 over par, Hooky.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think I think a lot of people were actually just going to sign up for negative reasons to see exactly what she's about to do after shooting 52 over par. And maybe it's not the most positive media attention we're wanting. It's more negative. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence, if you can't tell, Hooky.
Fair enough, Saif. Look, as far as sponsor exemptions go, this is genius. It's going to attract enormous scale. It'll bring in plenty of non-golf media. I mean, the surname Trump is absolutely atomic at the moment. As much negative and positive press, but it is going to be claiming the spotlight. So well done, LPGA. Big tick. But I have to query, Sophie, why on earth do we have an elite professional sport, golf, where a rank amateur is actually invited to play just because they've got a big surname? I mean, imagine a college driver who just happens to have a surname Obama gets invited to be driver number 21 on the F1 grid. Imagine a weekend warrior jogger running the 5,000-meter world championships just because another member of their family is famous. I mean, every other sport has too much integrity to pull something like that, but golf, not so much. I mean, I don't mind if this happened at the Epsom Tour or the Corn Ferry Tour. Knock yourself out. Go and invite her and have those players in. But allowing a school kid in at the elite level, particularly potentially at the expense of an elite athlete, I think that's bush league to me. And I reckon I would suggest that every elite sport in golf, every elite tour in golf, should just be refusing sponsor invites. Everyone should get in on merit, not this weird system of, oh, well, you know, you've got a cool name, so you're in.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what pro-ams are for, Hooky. I mean, maybe invite her to the pro-am and make a bigger event and a spectacle of that. And there might be people that stay back because they see some of the golfers that she was playing for in that group. But shooting 52 over in an LPGA event, and maybe kudos to her, she's not going to get that kind of score, but it just doesn't sit right with me.
No. I tell you what else doesn't sit right with me, the concept that the old course at St Andrews is being lengthened, Soph. What did you make of that news during the week, that Mackenzie and Ebert, who are overseeing not so much a redesign of the course, but certainly an extension of a number of tee blocks to continue to make it relevant for the modern men's professional game?
It is kind of a bit of a redesign as well, though. They are creating a couple more bunkers on their fairways, trying to put them more into play for those professional elite golfers. And look, we know that the old course is notorious for being dependent on the wind. Like, a lot of those bunkers don't come into play when it's downwind, but as soon as it's into the wind, those bunkers are coming into play. Okay, I think it's a bit of a panic from the 2022 Open, where Cam Smith went and shot 20 under, and that is a record. But, I mean, it wasn't back till 2017 where Spieth won with only minus 18 and there was heaps of wind. I do think it's a bit of a reaction. I also think, how far do we push this? How much do courses keep having to lengthen and lengthen them? I mean, Augusta is notorious for having to purchase properties, extend their boundaries. There's only so much money these courses can put into it. It's just because technology for those elite athletes is just getting better and better. And, I mean, we're about to have the rollback of the ball in 2028. It's coming in.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think it's a bit of an overreaction just yet, Hooky. That's my opinion.
I think we probably agree here. What on earth is this sport doing, Soph? We're constantly told this is a sport for all, but the R&A and St Andrews, the home of golf, are blowing millions on tees and setups that only elite professional players will actually ever use. I mean, the girls and women that they all preach about get no benefit here. The hacker like me, who fronts up and pays X amount of pounds to go and play the old course at St Andrews, it doesn't mean anything to me because I'm not going back and playing off those championship tees. The last Open at St Andrews, as you rightly pointed out, was completely farcical. Tees are currently stationed on other courses, you know, either side of the old course. It was still a drive and a pitch pretty much everywhere. They were playing 6 hour plus rounds because most greens are drivable. The weights are just inexplicable. And so despite all this evidence that one of the world's great courses is becoming obsolete, the program says that there's no problem with distance. And here I think that the R&A, who has tried to rein in the ball, I understand that, but they're pandering to this madness. This idea that there's no issue. Of course there's an issue. There's a massive issue. We should be, as a collective, as a sport, starting to look at the footprint that we take up. And here we are just trying to grow and grow and grow it to accommodate one very, very small, infinitesimally small group of people, men's professional players. Here's what I would say. No, no, no. until you're actually prepared to play with a ball that suits this course, don't come back. We'll put the women on and we'll put the amateurs on, but the professionals should be banned from these sorts of courses until they can front up and play in a manner that is suiting of what this golf course is all about. We shouldn't just have to be extending it and extending it and extending it because professional golfers can hit it further and further.
Bans, a great exaggeration, but I'm kind of here for it. But I mean, look back at last year when the women went and played their Open at St. Andrews. Lydia Ko was hitting a 3-wood into the 17th. Like, yep. And that was because it was dead into the wind. It was pouring down with rain. Like, it's still so suitable for the women's golf, and we saw it there. It was an incredible shot from her. I encourage our listeners to go back and look at the highlights. It's insane. She hits this high little flighty 3-wood into the wind, lands it onto the green. It's awesome. So, I mean, this course has still got such a place the way that it's already set up, like you said, for the majority of golfers.
So what happens, so Kooyonga 2027, Liv comes to town and all of the players say, great course, loved it, enjoyed it, just too short. Got to work out a way of creating some longer tees. And then suddenly we've got, I don't know, you could be playing the fourth hole from behind the third green and you've got to hit over the green. You could be asking them to take out the fence behind the 16th tee and extend that one all the way back into the backyard of the house that they own behind there. I mean, this is kind of what professional male golfers are expecting golf clubs to do, and it is completely unreasonable. Augusta National can do it. Maybe the old course can do it, but every other golf course out there, it's too much to ask, and I think it is a massive problem in the game, and we are going the wrong way by pandering to it, by continually expanding these golf courses and making them less and less about what they have traditionally been. It's a great shame. I tell you what wasn't a great shame, though, Soph, was the South Australian Golf Industry Awards Night on Saturday night. It began with you coming up and chatting with me about the highlights of South Australian golf. Can I just say, for those who weren't at the event, Sophie was absolutely sensational, gave some great insight into what's going on in golf in South Australia. But it was a great night, wasn't it? It's an awards night, so it can get a little bit long in the tooth, if you like. It's not the most riveting or exciting of events, but a lot of worthy achievers, Soph.
Oh, yeah, it was an incredible night. And gosh, did I have fun with you at the start of the show, Hooky? I had great fun. We were a bit more tame. Wallace, you'd be proud of us. We didn't have any arguments on stage. We actually helped each other out here and there, which was good to see some teamwork for the first time ever.
I'm not convinced that the Kooyonga crowd was delighted with me when I made the quip about I got unanimous support on Liv going to Kooyonga from their members. But no, they were good. They're a wonderful club. So many wonderful clubs. So many wonderful stories. So if I might just share a few of them that I've got in front of me now. The volunteer of the year was Deb Christie from Lamoureux. I think you might have snuck home because you had the early tea time as part of the club championships on Sunday morning and snuck home. But Deb Christie came up onto the stage in tears. She was that excited about having won this award. She's very heavily involved in that Riverland region, strong member of Lamoureux, been instrumental in getting women and girls into golf. Rob Vincikovic was the club general manager of the year, thanks to the GMAs. So he's the Glenelg general manager and a good friend of this show. Damien Wrigley was from Mount Osmond. He was the PGA Management Professional of the Year. Adrian Wickstein won the High Performance Pro. That's shared between him and Gareth Jones every year. So it was Wicky's turn, if you like, but they are just both elite coaches. Club of the Year, great story. The Pat GC, West Beach Parks, they've done some incredible work to that place. So that is tremendously exciting. Women and Girls in Golf Award was won by the Aston Hills Golf Club. You talked about Phil Chapman, who won the Senior Order of Merit. There's a kid called Acacia Curtis, who's a trainee pro, an associate pro, who's doing wonderful things up there with the girls and women's program. Anne-Marie Knight was Game Development Coach winner. And Sam Smith is just the last one I'll mention. He was the Turf Management Award winner. Now, he comes from Wollonga, which is the home of the Webex. They've done two of those in a row now. Been incredible events, obviously not at the scale of Liv, but certainly promoting young professional golfers around Australia. They've done a great job, and Sam Smith has done an incredible piece of work with that golf course. So it was a great night, wasn't it, Soph?
Yeah, 100%. And look, it was a great night celebrating some great achievements in South Australian golf. Even just going to the ladies' bathroom, I ran into so many ladies away there because I'd spoken earlier at the top of the show. and they'd come from everywhere, Hookie, to come to this night. So it was great. It was great to see everyone out there, and it was actually a brilliant night, and you did a pretty good job yourself.
Pretty good job. Well, you were amazing. I'll take pretty good from you. That's about the most praise I've got from you in the 6 months since we've been doing this show together. Just a quick one that I want to mention. Alan Fulton from the Vines Golf Club of Ranelagh, good player, about a 3-4 handicapper, played in their Twilight last Thursday night. So nine holer. Looks like to me he was playing the back nine at the Vines. He started on the par three, which is the 10th, I reckon, with a pickup. Not a great start. Parred the 11th, bogeyed the 12th, got a shot there, so that was useful. From there, he played the last six holes, wait for it, Soph, in four under. Mm-hmm. So he parred the par 5 13th, had a lazy hole in one on the 14th, went par on the 15th and 16th, had an eagle on the 17th and a par coming home. 21 points, the winner of the competition, I believe, but that is quite incredible. Imagine having two eagles in four holes.
Yeah, can you imagine? Did you say he eagled the 13th?
No. That's a tough hole, Soph. He had a par there, and that was an incredibly good par, might I say. But then he had a hole-in-one on the 14th.
Oh, sorry.
And an eagle two on the 17th. Nice try. Oh. I know where you were heading.
Yeah, I was about to jump in there. I thought I heard the 13th, and I was like, oh, yeah, easy hole. I remember that one. It's my co-host's favourite hole. But no, an eagle on a hole in one on the 14th. That's a good hole in one. I'm happy if I just hit the green on that hole.
Yeah. It sort of plays a bit longer than you think, that one. So, yeah, well done to Alan Fulton. Love those little stories from around the clubs. That is a really special achievement. I think I've probably had two eagles in my life. He's had two in about 45 minutes. Not bad going. So, let's just take a quick look at some scores from around Australia and around the world, and then we might start to think about our course in focus, which is going to be the Blackwood Golf Club today. I'm looking forward to chatting to it about it with you, because you were someone who has seen that course regularly over the journey of Pennant Golf, so I'm sure you'll have some fascinating insights. But very quickly, first of all, the Hong Kong Open finished yesterday afternoon. Tom McKibben, a lot of live players in this, and I'll tell you why, but Tom McKibben won it by 7 strokes from Peter Uihlein. So incredible victory. It was 8 strokes up and bogeyed the last. So he was just in dominant form, Tom McKibben. Scott Hendon, Matt Jones were the best of the Australians, tied for sixth. The two South Australians, Wade Ormsby and Jack Buchanan, both missed the cut. But it is fascinating, isn't it, with these events that are now getting you into the Masters and the Open, all of the LIV guys turn up and play them, which, yeah, I mean, you can argue the toss over LIV and what it's done has sort of fractured the game a little bit, but it does mean there are a lot of big names that are turning up at a place like Hong Kong to play an event like this.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. And I've got to say, Tom McKibben, it was actually a tournament record. He shot 20 and under, and he started the tournament with a course record 60 and then just went 65, 65, 63, just as you do. And I mean, well, he's a rising LIV star, and I can't wait to see him play at the Masters and the Open. I think it's a great initiative by the RNA and Augusta National.
Yeah, great that they're working together in sync with that and making those events. It's not just about prize money, because it's very difficult to generate the enormous prize money that will get the big name players there, but certainly getting exemptions into major events is a great way of going about it. So if we'll stay in Asia, we'll go to the Maybank Championship, which was played in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Our own Hannah Green went down in a three-way playoff to Miyu Kamoshita. They're 18 under, all three of them. She went down to a birdie in the first playoff hole, but a great showing by the Australians. Grace Kim, Karis Davidson, both in a tie for 16th. And Cassie Porter, a T39 as well. So I think it was about 70 in the field, no cut. So a couple of decent checks for a few of the Australians there, and they're all gaining speed very nicely as they begin to start to think towards the Women's Australian Open here at Cooyonga in March.
Yeah, all our Australians were tracking very nicely. And I mean, it was a bit of a shame to see Hannah Green in that playoff. She just had a bit of a poor bunker shot. But apart from that, she played incredible. And I mean, all credit to Yamashita. She's a rookie on the LPGA Tour. This is only her second professional win following the Women's British Open, which is pretty unreal. But she held like a 20-footer putt for birdie on the playoff hole, and she was really a deserving winner.
Nah, fair enough. So, if you make a good point. Hannah Green, I think 7 birdies and 3 bogeys in that last round. So, a wild-eyed ride for someone who was as consistent as her. Just worth sharing the news from second stage of qualifying for the DP World Tour. Our very own Jack Thompson is through to the final stage. So he'll be playing about 160 in the field, 108 holes of golf to get through to claim a DP World Tour card. He got through not without a few wobbles. He began the last 18-9 and finished it in a tie for 19th. Only 24 of his particular section got through to that final stage. So I'm absolutely thrilled for Jack Thompson. The two Jacks, Jack Buchanan and Jack Thompson, go to the final stage. As I said, over 108 holes in Spain next week. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had two of our own local South Aussies who had DP World Tour cards next year?
Oh, wouldn't that just be incredible? And I mean, Jack Buchanan actually mentioned in his interview with us a couple of weeks ago how much Tomo had been helpful to him and a real mentor. So it's great to see the two of them advancing to that next stage.
Actually, I played against Jack Thompson in a Bonner Cup match once. So I was feeling like I was in the prime of my game, and this skinny little school kid came up against me and absolutely dusted me 5-3. And do you know how relieved I am to know that he's gone on to become a really top-end professional player? Because if he was a bit of a dud and he'd beaten me like that, I would feel quite ashamed of myself. But at least I can just console myself with the fact that I got beaten by someone who is an absolute genuine star. So looking forward to seeing Jack Thompson in that final stage alongside Jack Buchanan. Hey, just a couple of quick ones, a bit more locally. The PGA Associates Australian Championship was played at Cobram Baruga Golf Club last week. A couple of great results for South Australia. Joe Hodgson from Mount Osmond Golf Club. Know Joe really well, he's a good kid. He finished in 13th place. Harry Coote, good mate of yours, finished in a tie for 34th. So, yeah, those guys, you know, they're not young guys, but I do feel like if they can get through their traineeship, I still think they're a chance of making it as touring pros. It's going to be interesting to see where they end up in their careers. I mean, they've gone down the traineeship program rather than touring, but they're talented players, aren't they? So if you were to see both of these guys regularly, and you'd love to see them have a crack at a tour somewhere.
Oh, they're incredibly talented players, the both of them. And look, I actually think their game is trending in the right direction since joining this traineeship program. Particularly Coote, I reckon he's playing better and better, and he's having more success at some of these tournaments. And they're really, it's been interesting watching them. They travel together a fair bit, and I just feel like they're egging each other on as well. So I think it's creating a great environment for them just to improve their game even more.
So if I reckon it's time for us to get into our golf course in focus, and I really wanted to take some time with you to speak about the Blackwood Golf Club, Tier 2 golf course in Cherry Gardens. It's a place that I reckon you would have seen regularly. I've got to be honest with you, I'm a big fan. I think it's up there with our best Tier 2 course in South Australia, and there's plenty to pick from. Just your overall thoughts, first of all, what do you think of Blackwood when you think about you going to head up there and play a pennant match? Well, it's going to be next February, isn't it?
Well, I'm normally hoping I'm not playing Blackwood is normally my first situation. I do not like playing Blackwood at Blackwood, but I actually 100% agree with you. It's one of my favourite Tier 2 courses, and like you said, there's a lot to choose from, so that is a true accolade for the Blackwood Golf Club. But look, it's such an interesting course. It's quite short, which means there's a lot of thinking off the tee, but also a lot of thinking in terms of placement. There's a lot of two-tier greens. There's a lot of slopes. Like, you really have to think about where you're placing your ball. You do not want a putt going downhill. They're all slippery, and you could end up with one double the amount that you started with.
I just talked to you a little bit about the history of the course. It was first established on the 12th of May, 1930, but its current venue only came into place in about 1961. So they were in an area of land just about a mile and a half out of Blackwood, just south on the property of a gentleman named Lachlan McTaggart. He was leasing his land for 1 shilling per year, which even back in those days wasn't much money. So that was closed in 1955. They went to Blair National Park in 1960 before purchasing the land in Cherry Gardens in 1961. That's where they've been ever since. There's a couple of facts that you will really appreciate, Soph. Blackwood was the first South Australian golf club to admit women as full members. That was in 1986. And in 2001 became the first club that permitted women to play in the Saturday field. So absolute groundbreakers. I mean, this is commonplace now in South Australian golf clubs, but gee, we're not going back that far, only 25 years to allow women to play in the Saturday field and to be full members. So that's something that's really admirable about the club, that they led the way in something like that, and something, of course, you're very passionate about, Soph. Their president is Chris Lem. Their captain is Peter Schappel. I don't know much about either of those guys, but obviously they're doing a wonderful job with what they're the custodians of at the moment. Matthew Dent is the club professional there. He's been there for many, many years. He's an excellent club professional, has a great reputation, as does their general manager, Adam Hayes. Now, he moved from Thaxted Park. He joined Blackwood in March of this year. He won the GMA Award for Excellence in Golf Club Management back in 2018. He comes from a playing background as well, Adam, so he knows golf clubs back to front. He's an excellent operator. And their course superintendent is Stephen Pellett as well, who has been there for a very long time and has a great reputation as well. So they've got all of the right people in place, Soph, to steer them through what is a really rich time for golf at the moment. Tell me, when you think about Blackwood, what really stands out to you? What's the one thing you really love about it?
Well, I kind of touched on it when I first started talking about the golf course, but I think there's a lot of risk-reward at Blackwood. Like I said, it's a bit shorter, so you can choose to take driver wherever you want, and I know a lot of people like to do that. There's a lot of dog legs that you can just take it straight over the corner and you'll have a short club in, particularly with a lot of their par fives, including, for example, the second hole. You can take driver if you really want to, but there's some pretty tall trees that you need to carry, and you do need to hit a pretty high cut. Or honestly, you can just lay up with an iron shot and probably still have a shot at the green with a 3-wood or 5-wood or whatever it is. So I think that's what I really like about it. It's a lot of risk reward, which, you know me, I love match play and I play a lot of pennant golf there. So therefore, it's kind of what I always think when I come to Blackwood, is I'm always thinking about what is my opponent doing? What do I need to do? What am I taking on? So that's kind of how it's probably because of my match play experience having always been there. It's probably what I think first when I think of Blackwood.
The thing that stands out to me, Soph, there is not a bad hole on that golf course. So you know how you can go to a tier two course and you can think, oh, gee, this one's a bit weak, or this one really lacks any sort of interest. You could play it and forget about it almost immediately. I feel like I go on every hole at Blackwood, and there are some better than others. You could maybe argue that 6 is a tiny bit weak, or 13's a tiny bit weak, maybe 17's a tiny bit weak, but I don't think they're bad holes. And I think overall, it's just a great patch of 18. Every time you get there, I feel like, oh yeah, this is a good fun hole. This is interesting. There's something going on with this hole as well. I feel like I get through all 18, and I've enjoyed, for different reasons, playing all 18 of them. That's probably the one thing that stands out to me. Then the other thing I'd say, and it's not uniform across the course, but they have a couple, maybe a dozen, maybe 8 or 9, really excellent greens complexes. So yeah. I think 1's great. 2's a bit meh. 3's great. 4's a bit meh. 5, not bad. 6, a bit meh. But then 7, wonderful green complex. 8, wonderful green complex. 9, wonderful green complex. I don't even mind 13, even though it's a bit of a weak hole. It's got that, you know, very serious slope, and you've got the bunkers in front. 15's really interesting. 16 has some definition to it as well. So there's a lot that I like about the – and 18. I think the two holes that are in front of the clubhouse there, beautiful. So that's 9 and 18, wonderful greens complex as well, that I think add to the fun of playing a course like that. Is there something that you get there and you walk away and you go, I wonder if they could maybe just tidy that up a bit, or maybe that's an area where I'd love to see them just maybe invest some time over the next 5 years?
Yeah, look, it's pretty simple for me. It's probably just their driving range, Hookie. Their driving range, they've got two driving ranges. One's a short driving range, so if you're probably a bit like yourself, if you're just running off the car park, you could probably hit about 5-9 irons and then just run to the first tee. But their actual full driving range...
Sounds like you've done that once or twice before, Soph.
I've done it plenty of times. But their full driving range, you have to walk through the car park to get there. There's not a lot of hitting areas, and you're often just hitting off sand, and you're actually hitting straight up to a hill, which I think it's going to the 14th tee block of the par 3, and it also runs alongside the 13th hole that you were talking about. So I just find it's a bit complacent. There's a big, massive tree in the middle of it. It's just probably not the best driving range. They could clean it up a bit, put some better turf, so you're actually not just hitting off sand and a bit of grass, but you're just hitting off some good turf.
Mm, No, good point. Look, my favourite hole there probably is the 12th, right? So I'll just a couple of things. One is I do think as much as, and your point was probably well made here, I do think probably there's maybe one or two too many holes where you have to take driver out of your hands. There is a lot of sort of shortish dog legs. I can kind of deal with that. But if I had to say one thing about one hole, and that's the 12th that I think is probably their feature hole. It's certainly my favourite hole. I think it's just so much drama. But I would love to see them make some more effort with the surrounds of that green. Make that green complex as fun as what they have been able to do with 9 and 18, for example, where I think they've been able to really develop some cool features around it. Really, they just have that water hazard in front and then, you know, it's cut into the sort of the side of the hill, if you like. There's one little bunker over on the left, I think, from memory. But and then it's just a fairly flat, straight green, just sort of a uniform little bit of slope all the way back down to the hazard. I would love that to become a feature hole. I would love that to be set up really interesting. It's a par five for the women that you would probably be well aware of. So you could have some really interesting pin placements if it was a women's pennant day because you've got to be making it a three shotter. You're coming in with a wedge. If there was just one thing I would say, I'd love to see, there's probably one or two other holes as well where they could just make their green surrounds, their green complex a little bit more defined and interesting. And I think it would take itself from a very good golf course into one of the really, truly elite golf courses here in South Australia.
Yeah, fair enough. Don't hate it, Hookie.
Well, that is Blackwood Golf Club. Just to wrap it up, Soph, look, I don't even know what they charge you to pay it, but I reckon that is just one place that if you are in Adelaide for any length of time, you might be here on a holiday or it's a place that you maybe haven't thought about. I just recommend go and play it. I reckon, like I said, insofar as our Tier 2 clubs are concerned, and we've got some good ones, Mount Osmond I really like personally. I'm a former member there. The Vines that we've talked about in the past. But I think Blackwood is at least as good as any of those sorts of places. And if there was any sort of suggestion, where do I want to play where I'm looking for something that isn't quite the Tier 1 and well over $100, I just reckon you can't go past Blackwood.
No, 100%. Like you said, it's got so many incredible holes. It was actually one of those courses when you put it to me as our course for this episode, I could remember every single hole. And so even just trying to choose a favourite hole, it was actually quite difficult and I agree with you. But I think that's what stands out to me about Blackwood. On some courses, I can get a bit complacent and kind of, you know, some holes start to look a bit the same.
Yep.
And that's often the case in some of those Tier 2 courses. But Blackwood's different. I could talk you through 1 to 18. I could even talk you through the 19th hole.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Soph. Just so much variety there. I mean, yeah, like you said, there's a lot of golf courses where you're walking to the next tee and you're pulling driver out of the bag before you've even thought of it.
Yep.
You can't do that at Blackwood. You've got to get onto every tee and think, right, what is my best play? What is my strategy here? And I think that is an admirable trait of a golf course. Hey, Soph, get us out with your weekly or fortnightly practice hack. I always love what little vignette you have for us and maybe a way that you can just take yourself to the range and I guess add to your own practice regime just to try and improve that little bit, maybe shave a stroke or two off your score.
Well, actually taking us off the range, Hookie, and I'm going straight to the putting green for this one because you know what? It is where you shave your shots. I know a lot of people and a lot of beginners spend most of their time on the range, but funny enough, if you want to get your handicap down, it's on the putting green. Again, it's pretty simple, Hookie. It's a putting mirror. I just reckon it's so important to have one in your bag. Just pull it out. It helps with where your eyes are sitting over the ball, which is actually really important. A lot of people will find that their eyes are either sitting over the top of the ball or they're sitting behind the ball. But also it shows you where your shoulders are, square to the target, and it also helps with your club face at the impact of the ball. It's really important to just keep on track of that and on top of it.
Well, I tell you what, you are probably, you would be in the top five best putters at amateur level in South Australia, male or female. So I've watched you play plenty of times and I've seen you hold bomb after bomb after bomb. So the mirror that I don't have, my wife has, and I'm going to have to now steal it out of her bag and claim it for myself because that is something I'm going to be adding to my practice regime very shortly, the putting mirror. Well done, Soph. Always a great chat. Now, we've got a big week coming up this week because we are going to be talking to Abby Burgess-Bryce and Olivia Parker. Abby Burgess-Bryce is the president of La Crosse Australia, and Olivia Parker is the captain of the Australian lacrosse team. They're going to be taking us through the Major League Sixes, which gets underway in a couple of weeks here at Marden in Adelaide. So that's going to be a fantastic chat. Our cricket chat, I don't know that we'll be able to drop any names just yet, but we've got some enormous interviews coming up very shortly. So plenty for our listeners to get excited about coming up in the coming weeks.
Oh, yeah, Hooky, I cannot wait for the next few weeks, particularly, like I said, with the cricket, with the Ashes coming up, we do have some exciting interviews planned. But that lacrosse one, I think that's going to be so exciting, and I can't wait to hear and talk to those girls.
Thanks for your company, everyone. Get out and play Blackwood Golf Club. It is one of the truly top-notch golf courses around Adelaide here. So always great to chat. We'll see you in a couple of days.
Thanks, Hooky.
With the last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.